You're listening to KSCO Santa Cruz, Salinas, Monterey, and San Jose, and 104 FM. This is From the Bookshelf. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for joining me. Whether or not you're a fan of the Fire Sign Theater, you're going to want to stay tuned for today's program because the daring and resourceful Phil Proctor is my guest. Phil Proctor is the surrealistic comedian and member of the Fire Sign Theater, as well as an actor of stage, screen, and television. And he's just written a memoir. It's called Where's My Fortune Cookie? My Psychic Surrealistic Story.
Silly story.
I missed a word.
I should leave out the silly.
By Fireside Theater's Phil Proctor, and he's narrowly escaped death just long enough for me to be able to say, Phil Proctor, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. It's nice to be up on the old shelf again, where I belong.
Up on my bookshelf, I have all the Fireside Theater albums, and my favorite album cover of all time, I believe. I love the Sgt. Pepper album, of course, but I mean this album cover, with the cover of Marx and Lenin. All hail Marx and Lenin.
Yes.
Can we just start there? Tell us about that.
First of all, this was an idea I came up with because as you'll know if you read the book. There's a chapter dedicated to my adventures in the Soviet Union back in 1959, when I was lucky enough in my freshman year at Yale to go on this trip with the Yale Russian Chorus. See, I was a Russian language major at that time. I still have the uniform somewhere, and I decided it would be a great way to combine my skills and interests if I joined the Russian Chorus, because I'd be learning Russian and singing Russian songs at the same time. And little did I know that Denis Mickiewicz, the fearless Latvian creator of the chorus, decided or arranged for us to visit the Soviet Union. And we sang on street corners all over the place for a long summer. And we traveled also with Dwight Mitchell and Willie Ruff of the Mitchell-Ruff duo. And we ended up in Vienna at the Communist Youth Festival on the grounds where Hitler used to hold his huge rallies. It was quite a trip. And, of course, I came back from that with a general conversational fluency in Russian. Я могу ещё по-русски говорить, понимаете? И пою, и пью. And I can still, you know, speak Russian and sing Russian songs and drink, which is what I said. Пою и пью. That's sing and drink. The Russian, it's funny that the two Russian words for singing and drinking sound the same, but that's Russia for you. So anyway, when the Fire Sign Theater happened, we all brought you know our skill sets to the table, and one of the skill sets I had was speaking many languages, among them Russian, and so I thought for this particular album that it might be fun to do a parody of the Russian propaganda posters, okay? And the original cover of that album, How Can You Be in Two Places at Once When You're Not Anywhere at All, fondly known as the Marx-Lenin album, was going to have consumer products being paraded by in front of us. So instead of rockets, there would be a big toothbrush and a big tube of toothpaste, things like that. But that didn't make it into the final artwork. Nonetheless, I designed it to look as much like a propaganda poster. And of course, the pun came readily to my mind, Marx and Lenin. And because of our connections at Columbia Records, we were able to actually get permission from Groucho and John to use their images on the album, which was an amazing coup, to say the least. I had run into Mr. Lenin once down at some kind of a public demonstration in Las Feliz, and I gave him a Papoon for President Not Insane button, which he gladly accepted, since we had the goons in common, as comedic heroes, and he acknowledged that he was aware of Fireside, which tickled me to no end, and because besides being inspired by the goons, the Beatles inspired us greatly. We would listen to all their albums. That's why, Cuckoo Cuckoo is in, various Beatles references show up in the Fire Sign oeuvre, because we would all sit together and listen to the latest album and just be blown away and terribly, wonderfully inspired by it. But the outcome, or I should say one of the effects of that album cover, All Hail Marx Lenin, was that there was a runaway Soviet republic which emerged during the breakup of the Soviet Union, called Akhbanistan or something like that, okay? And they came out with a, I don't know if you remember this, but they came out with a stamp, two stamps, which was basically All Hail Marx Lenin, with images of the two great men on the stamp, and they sold them internationally in order to raise money to fund their revolutionary army. Did you know that?
I was not aware of that, no.
Yeah, well, it was so pervasive that the National Public Radio did an interview with me about it. I still have one of the stamps left, okay? And, of course, it was an absolute ripoff of the album cover.
I want one.
But for a good cause. Yamaguskazach. And that's happened to us several times. There was a line of Nick Danger clothing that we had absolutely nothing to do with and received no royalty from. And, of course, Rocky Rococo Pizza, which is a big chain throughout the the Minneapolis area.
And none of you had anything to do, none of the actual fire sign had anything to do with that?
No, that one, indeed, Peter Bergman and I, when we were on tour as Procter & Bergman, we were feted to an after-show feast of pizza by the guy who had opened this local store in St. Paul, wherever the heck it was, Rocky Rococo's Pizza. And we basically gave him our blessing. The next thing we knew, it was like a national franchise. And so we got in touch with him and made a license fee, a modest license fee for the use of Rocky's name. Another one was Bear Whiz Beer, okay, which was featured in a pseudo television commercial. It's in the water. That's why it's yellow. Bear Whiz Beer. In our album, Everything You Know Is Wrong. And in that case, I discovered I was doing a movie in Colorado and called Robo Chick, in fact. My wife and I are walking around one evening. We walked, where was it, dear? Sorry. She was shooting a commercial in Scottsdale, Arizona, right?
Yeah.
And I came down to be with her. This was when we were recording, of course, and we walked by a window that was a full display of Bear Whiz Beer merchandise, T-shirts and cup holders and underwear and posters and calendars and, you know, jogging shorts and caps. And so I went in and bought everything and brought it back, showed it to the boys, and we lawyered up and worked out a deal with them, which is in effect to this very day, because they're still selling Bear Whiz goods. It was a company called Eagle Products in Kansas City, and they realized that the guy who had brought this idea to them had stolen it from us. We had to go to court and prove that we originated the product, Bear Whiz Beer, and once we proved that, they were very cooperative, and they sent us all huge cartons of all of their goods, and we get regular calendars and updates of merchandise, and more importantly than that, a royalty check, you know, quarterly royalty check. So that was a satisfying payoff.
You guys missed the boat. There's so many things you could have merchandised if you had been inclined.
Yeah, you know, the Firesign Theater really was a gathering of hippies, okay? Four hippies, basically. And I was not a hippie, and I don't think Peter or Dave or Phil, for those of you who don't know the Firesign Theater, it's a four-man group, Phil Austin, Dave Osman, Peter Bergman, and myself, and we're all fire signs. I'm a Leo, Peter's a Sag, David's a Sag, and Phil is an Aries, okay? And we discovered that when we got together on Peter Bergman's Radio Free Oz show on KPFK, listener-supported radio, in the Valley off of Ventura Boulevard in Los Angeles, where I'd basically just come out with I just come out after doing a play there and ran into Peter Bergman, who was a classmate of mine at Yale, and who had written lyrics for two musicals that I starred in at Yale, written by Austin Pendleton. Booth is back in town, and Tom Jones, where I got to play the title role. So when we all got together, Bergman was, if he wasn't a hippie, he was playing one on the radio, okay? Right? And Phil Austin, very, very artistic man, very great Renaissance artist in so many ways. He was on the edge, if you were, Will, and he was. And Dave Osman was basically a poet at heart. And so he would have just loved to have hung out, you know, in a dark club with bongos and, you know, reciting poetry, even though he had been involved in straight radio as, you know, news announcer and host and all that back in New York. But we found, in the four of our spirits, we found the common thread of rebellion and artistry. And that was basically allowed free range on Peter Bergman's late night call-in counterculture talk show, I think the first in history, Radio Free Oz. And we all improvised together and created and began to create the string of work that ended up with three Grammy nominations for Best Comedy Albums and a 50-year career in radio, some film work, some television work, and a lot of touring.
Well, when you went into the studio to record the first one, and I guess that was Waiting for the Electrician or someone like him.
Exactly.
You had this material that you had improvised. So did you, you know, there was a lot. What are the, now I'm asking like seven questions at once, Phil.
Yeah, well, how can you be in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all? We're proving it right now.
What were the kind of the comedy records that you listened to, and how did you think about doing it as a record?
Well, okay. Yes, that's a multi-layered question.
Yeah.
About a multi-layered album from a multi-layered group. Basically, all of us shared in common that the love of the Goon Shows, which, again, if your listeners are not acquainted with the Goon Shows, it was where Peter Sellers, Spike Milligan, and various other insane English comedians did a series of radio shows really in England during the Second World War and after for quite a while, that are the most surrealistic half hours on that you will ever hear anywhere. And it was an inspiration, of course, for the Beatles and for Monty Python and for these four college lads all the way on the West Coast in California. Other than that, for me, my influences were Bob and Ray, my heroes, who actually read my first material on the air, because I used to listen to them religiously in New York before I'd go to school, at Alan Stevenson School, and then I would record what I missed when I had to go off to assembly, because we did the Alan Stevenson School Orchestra would rehearse and I played the violin, and my mom would record it for me on this built-in radio we had in this tape recorder. I'd come back and I'd listen to them while I did my homework. And I'd save the funny bits, the funniest bits, by crudely editing them together with scotch tape and scissors on a reel. And those outtakes that ended up, or those saved bits, ended up on one of Larry Josephson's collections of the best of Bob and Ray, which
wow.
I'm very, you know, happy about. But I sent them in a postcard once, which simply said, "Get well soon," all right? And they read that on the air. All right, and then I sent in something else later, and they read that on the air. So that was my first acknowledged writing on any public media.
They were
great. But then visually, it was Ernie Kovacs all the way, okay? Because Ernie Kovacs represented surrealism in a visual form, and it was all done live, just like Bob and Ray, okay? Although Bob and Ray did not improvise all of their material or even write all of their material. A fellow named Koch, K-O-C-H, actually wrote much of their material.
I understand they never even met him in person. He just wrote their material.
That's right. They paid him, but they, you know, through the mail, and they received his material through the mail and performed it, but no, they never met him in person.
I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO, and we're chatting today with the Firesign Theater's Phil Proctor. His new book is called Where's My Fortune Cookie? Just a minute ago, we were talking about Bob and Ray. Who else was influential to you, Phil Proctor?
Another major influence, Ernie Kovacs Live. And then beyond that, the writings of Peter Benchley, Mad Magazine, okay,
yeah.
Which I also wrote letters into and are published in the anthology. You'll see them in the anthology.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry to interrupt now, but I have to. Because you also wrote letters to EC Comics. I'm a big EC Comics.
Yeah, fan. Yeah. I had a subscription to EC Comics, and I had a hamper full of first editions, and my mother threw them out.
Oh, okay.
You know, in retrospect, I don't know if I would have lugged them around, you know, from one coast to the next or anything. But still, you know, it's a keen loss that I'm sure that we share with many of your listeners.
Yes.
Right? You know, the things you collected that
your mother threw away.
Yeah, that big ball of aluminum foil.
Oh, I still have that.
Oh, you do? Well, you're very lucky. So, anyway, those were my major influences. And as for the other boys, David was obviously influenced by writings, T.S. Eliot and Ogden Nash, and what's his name, the Irish guy who wrote Ulysses.
James Joyce.
Yeah, that's the guy, a good old J.J., and people like that. And Bergman was influenced by everything, because Bergman had a brain. He is no longer with us, sadly, although he occasionally shows up in my dreams to torment me. But he had a brain like a sponge, and by that I don't mean he was enophiletic or whatever. You know, he wasn't a savant. He wasn't an idiot savant. He was just an idiot, okay? but he was also a savant because he could absorb things, and that's why he was the perfect host for Radio Free Oz. When he would interview somebody, he could become that person after he'd interviewed them. He had this uncanny ability to just absorb personalities and absorb ideas. So he was a protean host. And when the Firesign connected with him, what we basically were doing, we were pretending to be people that he was interviewing, okay? And we make up all of these crazy characters. And one evening, I think it was maybe even the first night we got together, we did an improvisation called the Oz Film Festival, where we all played multiple filmmakers and wanted to show our movies on his show. And Phil Austin, who, as I say, was a Renaissance man and was greatly influenced by the spirit of comedy in general. You know, I don't know where his real sources were, but I think he kept them close to his vest and obscure. But he was a great improvisationary comedian and a musician. He brought music to the group, okay? He was a very talented guitarist and composer. And me, because I was a singer and in my own way a composer of choral work and things, and played the violin, we had at least half of us could add musical elements to the work, okay? But we did this crazy improv, the Oz Film Festival, and he was playing, I played a French character named Jean-Claude, and I wanted to show a movie called 2 Weeks with Fred, where I follow my friend Fred in Paris throughout his life. If he's sleeping, you are sleeping. If he's peeing, you are peeing. If he's eating, you are eating. But of course, it takes 2 weeks to see, so I couldn't show it. But Austin was playing an adult filmmaker named Jack Love, and he wanted to show one of his movies called Blondie Pays the Rent on the radio. And he started to play it, and Bergman said, wait, stop it. Stop the projector. See, we can't show a dirty movie on the radio. He said, well, it's not really a dirty movie. It's a movie about life. It's a movie about love. He said, no, I can't do it. I'll lose my license. And the phones lit up, and so did we. And they were all saying, how can you censor this man? He's an artist. He wants to show his movie. Let him show his movie.
On the radio.
Yeah, and that's when we thought, oh, we're really on to something here. Let's keep doing this. And then we got a fellow interested from Columbia Records because Austin had done voices for an astrology album. Okay, remember, this is all the New Age.
Right,
back
yes,
in
I remember
the late
those
60s,
albums. Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And also, he played in a Duckman, an album called Duckman. I think that's what it was called. I can't remember. But he had a connection with a producer named Gary Usher at Columbia. And so Gary said, knew about the phenomenon of Radio Free Oz, which was, you know, really happening in the L.A. area. Everybody was listening to it. And he said, I want to make a Radio Free Oz record. And so Austin and Bergman went out to dinner with him, and Austin convinced him that he should do an Oz Firesign Theater record. And Gary said, whatever you want. So we did, but we weren't able to use the name Oz because Disney had the rights to it for this cartoon they were doing called Return to Oz. So, you know, we got a cease and desist letter from the rat. All right, and say, you know, you can't do this, or we'll chew your nose off. And so we just changed it to the Fireside Theater, which of course is confusing enough.
Without Oz involved.
Yeah. And most of these stories are in the book. I think, you know, wrote it about 2 years ago, and I collaborated with a wonderful friend of mine named Brad Schreiber, who is really a very prolific book writer. And in his background is that. He wrote a book called Becoming Jimi Hendrix, which is now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame library. And, of course, they're talking about making it into a Broadway show. Listen, if they can make SpongeBob SquarePants into a Broadway show, I think they might be able to do something with Becoming Jimi Hendrix, right?
Well, have you been on SpongeBob SquarePants and all the things you've done?
No.
No.
No, I haven't. I did the role of Howard on the Rugrats. For 14 years, okay? And that's really what I've been known for.
That's what got you your star on Hollywood Boulevard, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Not my personal star, but the Rugrats had a star ceremony on Hollywood Boulevard in front of the Hollywood Toy Store right next to Frederick's of Hollywood, which was a famous lingerie store, right? And the Hollywood Toy Store is, ironically, where I would purchase most of the props and costumes and masks and sound effects for our Firesign Theater stage productions, which we did at a place called the Ash Grove, Ed Pearl's The Ash Grove.
Right down the street from my house on Melrose.
Is it really?
Yeah, well, it was. Well, yeah.
It was. Yeah, and now it's the Improv. It's been the Improv for years and years and years. But that's where we would stand up our material in order to try it out in front of an audience. Because that way we would know what we could, it would help us to design the writing of the record and the production of the records. I think we did How Can You Be There, in, you know, certain aspects of that. I know for a fact that we did Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers, which was our biggest selling album at the time, next to Nick Danger, Third Eye, which is on the flip side of How Can You Be. And it was called A Life in the Day. And it was all about watching television and remote controlling, click, 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 channel surfing. We invented the idea of channel surfing so that we would on stage go, you know, change our look and go from one place to another instantaneously. And that was establishing a whole new style of theater, but it then also became a very popular album for us. And it was the album that was inducted into the Library of Congress's historical recordings, along, ironically, with Jimi Hendrix's catalog and Martha and the Vandellas. So we were, those of us who were still alive, were down in Washington, D.C. for the ceremony and got a wonderful tour of the Library of Congress and a great luncheon there. And, of course, I will be performing there with the other surviving member of the group, Dave Osman, on the 28th in the Coolidge Theater at the Library of Congress, September 28th. We'll be flying out on Monday for this special command performance, and we're hoping that this will be followed by an announcement that they have purchased the Firesign Theater archives. So keep your fingers crossed about that.
They're crossed at this very moment.
As are your eyes.
We're talking.
Yeah, right.
We're talking with Phil Proctor, and Phil and I are both naked, by the way.
Yeah. Now, well, that's another story. All right. I told the story of this of showing the dirty movie on the radio when I was being interviewed on the road somewhere, and I also mentioned, I said, and I'd heard somewhere that there was an interview with a naked woman on the radio where people called up and complained that they should not show a naked woman on the radio. And after I finished telling this story, this girl who was sitting in on the interview said, "That naked girl?" I said, "Yeah." She said, "That was me." Now, the book, yes. I don't even know if that story's in the book, but the book, Where's My Fortune Cookie, as you know, is chock-a-block full of psychic coincidences like that.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you believe that there are coincidences, or do you believe that you have a psychic connection? What do you think?
Well, I knew you were going to ask me that. No, I have a psychic connection.
I see. You know, I saw a flyer for a psychic fair.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, why do they need a flyer?
Exactly. That's right. It's like the meeting of the prognosticators has been postponed until next week. So anyway, yes. There are an uncanny and inexplicable, to me, you can make up your own mind if you read the book, series of events that have occurred during my life up to this very day that have shaped the direction of my life. I also did study higher consciousness with a guru named Jacques Honduras, who I was turned on to by Peter Fonda, of all people, and I learned how to utilize higher consciousness and to appreciate the mind's power and its effect on the invisible world and its ability to create our ability to influence the world around us and people around us in a positive way or a negative way, depending on, you know, who you are or what you want to accomplish. And I've had many funny experiences about that too. For instance, when I was at the height of playing with this power, because I realized I'd always been fascinated, I should say, in the mind and uses of the mind from when I was a little kid. I used to control my dreams when I was a very young child. If I had a pleasant dream, which is very cartoony or Disney-like or something, I would play it again the next night, okay? And if I had a flying dream, I'd play that again. Anything that I really enjoyed, I would make a concerted effort to replay the next night.
Can you still do this?
Not to the same extent, no. Unfortunately, I don't. For instance, I can't replay erotic dreams. I can't even enjoy them anymore because I'm married. All right? And
well,
I don't know if it happens.
There's
to
a song
well,
called
it does.
I Can Dream, can't I? Remember that song?
I asked about it on Facebook, and I got a lot of very similar responses that, you know, ever since I've gotten married, I can't have erotic dreams anymore because I feel guilty, or I tell the naked woman I'm with, "I'm sorry, I'm married. I can't play with you right now," all right? So yes, my ability to do that has changed. However, everybody has these recurring nightmares, and I had one, which was the same old thing, the history test that you had to take that you hadn't studied for, right?
Right.
Right? So one night, I'm having this dream. This is decades ago now. And I realized I was in a dream state, and I said to myself, well, I don't have to go through this anymore. I'm just going to wake up. And I did, and I never had the dream again. See? And it all has to do really with states of consciousness within your own consciousness, or your consciousness of consciousness. Okay? because whether like it or not, we really are the masters of our reality, of our perception. Okay, once you kind of figure that out, I think the Buddha calls it illusion, right? We are the illusionists. We are the magicians of our lives. You know, we can make things appear and disappear, and sometimes we actually can figure out how we're doing it. You see, and that's another step in the elevation of consciousness. But the things that have happened to me, just in the title of the book. You want to hear the origin of that?
Yes, I do. I'm Gary Shapiro. This is From the Bookshelf on KSCO. We're talking today with Phil Proctor of the Fire Sign Theater. And he's just written a new book. It's called Where's My Fortune Cookie? My Psychic Surrealistic Story. Phil Proctor, tell us, why is the book called Where's My Fortune Cookie?
All right, now the first chapter is about this event. Peter Bergman and I, when we were touring as Proctor and Bergman, were involved in a Chinese gangland shooting in San Francisco.
It's a terrifying.
77, I think it was.
Your telling of the story is terrifying.
In the book?
Yes.
Well, you can thank Brad for that too, because he's written many books on comedy. In fact, he's got one out now. What are you laughing at? Okay, and my wife Melinda Peterson, who corrected me just a while ago, contributed a story to a wonderful book he wrote about theater disasters called "Stop the Show." Okay, he's published on Parallel Universe. Oh yeah, and they also put out. Here we go. He wrote the history of the L.A. Coroner's Office.
Oh, that must be a blip.
Death in Paradise. All right, so that's why he was able to make the story so terrifying, I guess. But what basically happened was Peter and I had performed at a club in San Francisco, and a dear friend of ours named Bill Alexander, a psychiatrist, Dr. Bill, wanted to take us out for dinner to a place called the Trident. And when we got there, because Peter Bergman had left his wallet in his costume pants, we had to go back to the hotel and get his wallet. And by the time we got to the Trident, it was closed, and Bill couldn't talk his way in. So he said, "Don't worry, we'll go to Chinatown. They're open late there." So we drive down there. We find a parking place in front of this very famous restaurant, the Golden Dragon. And we hop out, we go in. It's now Chinese dentist time. It's 2:30 in the morning. Okay? Waiter says, "You better order soon. We're going to close. We're going to close soon." And little did he know. And we said, so we ordered. And I'm bending over, having my second bowl of hot and sour soup. And I hear bang, bang, crash, crash, scream, scream. And I feel things flying over my lowered head. And I look up, and I see three guys in what I thought were ski masks, but they were stocking masks, and they were Chinese guys. One of them had a machine gun, another one had a shotgun, another one had a pistol, and they just killed two people in the table in front of us. So, and the machine gun is going constantly, bam, 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 bam. So I drop under the table, behind the steel column of the table. Bergman, who is facing me, glances over his shoulder. He drops down to the floor. Bill drops to the floor, but he's been shot. A machine gun slug and ricocheted off the floor, entered the heel of his boot, right on the seam. He had to squeeze the shoe to see where the bullet had entered, and is lodged to this very day behind his right knee. Okay? So anyway, the shooting continues. I had learned that morning that my Norwegian wife, my second wife, Barbro, was pregnant with my daughter, who's now, like 38, 39 years old. And so I'm lying under the table with the prospect of death and the prospect of life facing me, in my mind. And I'm thinking, well, life is responsibility. Death is nothingness, is release of responsibility. No responsibility, responsibility. What's going to happen? And I'm thinking all the time, well, the shooting's going on around us. People are dropping in various places, screaming and all that. And this little thing is going through my head. And I'm thinking, well, let's see. If Peter doesn't get wounded, we can continue with our tour, because we had to fly the next day to Colorado to perform at the University of Colorado. And if he gets killed, then I won't be able to tour anymore. And I thought, the next thing I thought was, when you're at the dentist's office, when the drilling stops, you can go home. And so I waited patiently. I heard them moving into another part of the restaurant. Good. And then the shooting stopped. And I looked, I stood up. Bergman watched them go out. And I said, "Peter, are you okay?" He said, "Yes, I am." "Bill, are you okay?" "No, I've been shot." And so from there on, it was basically triage. There were dead people and wounded people around us. Well, I wrapped a napkin around one guy's hand. A bullet had gone through his hand. and all of a sudden, the doors burst open, and in comes a cameraman and a lighting man, and they scanned the area and then ran out again. How surreal is that? And the next thing we knew, in comes medics and policemen, you know, just like this wave of medics. And they're cutting clothes off of pretty girls, and they're, you know, saving people if they can. And so we say to the cops, our friend's been shot, you know, where's the nearest hospital? And they told us where. So we take him out and drove him to the hospital, and, you know, our life went on. And there's more about it in the book. But here's the kicker,
And
this is absolutely true. A psychic friend of mine named Sharon McCann had predicted this shooting to me about a month and a half to 2 months before it happened. She had said clearly to me in an evening that we spent together up in Austin, New York, that I and Peter would be involved in a shooting, gangland shooting, with foreigners involved after a performance, and that people would be killed and wounded around us, but that Peter and I would get out unscathed. And this was a gang war retaliation between the Zhou Fang gang and the Wuching. The Wuching had, which it means young Chinese, and they were watching, so they were under the table too. They were trying to take over the rackets in Chinatown. And they had killed one of the Zhou Fang gang, and this was a retaliation. And they didn't get any of them. They were sitting in a table to the left of us, behind us. Thank God they didn't know where they were, or they might have moved down, you know, past our table, and I might have never been able to write this book. But
or
nonetheless,
be here on my show.
Now,
well, there's two. There's two possibilities.
I never got my fortune cookie. Well, you know, we had to perform the next day in Boulder, Colorado, and so we immediately started talking about this thing because it was all over the news. 5 killed, 11 wounded. At that time, the greatest mass murder in American history. Sadly, it's nothing now. But we were making jokes. Like, you know, Peter said, well, luckily, when the shooting started, my partner ordered the duck. And he said, and I ordered the scared prunes. But I never got my fortune cookie. All right, so fine. So Peter Bergman passes away about 5 years ago of leukemia. We had a memorial service up in the Washington State, and we had one down in Santa Monica. And at that particular event, one of our patrons, a woman named Gretchen, had ordered fortune cookies for Peter with his, you know, date of birth and date of death, and each one had a different title of one of our albums in it. And she distributed the fortune cookies among all of the mourners and friends who came for the memorial service. And I said, Gretchen, that is really thoughtful of you. And you did that because of we survived that shooting. And she said, what? I said, you know, Peter and I survived the Golden Dragon Massacre. She said, what? I said, wait a minute. You don't know about that? She said, no. I said, well, why did you get the fortune cookies? And she said, I'm sorry, this always tears me up. She said to me, because Peter Bergman appeared to me in a dream and said to me, I never got my fortune cookie.
Well, that has to be more than a coincidence, doesn't it?
Well, yes, I think so. I think that all the things that I write about in my book, which I felt compelled to write about, really, it was the primary reason why I wanted to tell my story up to now, is because of these events. Because I'm encouraging people who read the book and people who are interested or have had similar experiences to communicate them to me. You can reach me at phil.proctor@mac.com or at planetproctor.com, which is my blog site. I turn out a free blog, profusely illustrated, about every month called Planet Proctor. And I'm also on Facebook, although I've reached my limit of friends. I can't put up with any more friends. but anyway, I'm very curious to see, first of all, if the book strikes a chord with the general public, and not just, you know, my fan base and Firesign Theater fans. But I'm also curious to see if people get the message about listening to your inner voice or using your invisible powers, your mind powers, and what kind of experiences other people have had. And since I've spoken with some friends who have read the book, I've heard a slew of amazing, you know, and inexplicable tales about how they've been influenced psychically, coincidentally, you know, in their lives. So that's part of what I hope comes out of the distribution of the book, which will be available, by the way, on the 28th of September on Amazon and other places as a download and as a hard copy. And it is profusely illustrated. Lots and lots of great pictures from my files.
Are you going to do an audiobook also?
Nobody has approached me to do an audiobook yet, and I don't feel the burning ambition to go and rent a studio and do it, because it takes time. I'd rather be compensated for it, and I'd rather know that it would be properly distributed. So let's wait and see. Yeah, if the book inspires some company or some producer to reach out to me, then there will be an audiobook. Otherwise, it might be something that I do a little bit down the line.
Well, you mentioned that you have this Firesign Theater engagement coming up, but what else are you working on currently? Where can we see you?
Well, you can see me now on a PBS three-part special called F.S. Key, Francis Scott Key, After the Song, produced by Philip Marshall. It's available on your local PBS station, but there is no, since those stations are all independent, you'll have to just kind of keep your eyes open for it. It is also available on a thing called World Television or something like that. If you go to the website, fskey.com, you will find listings of where it might be available, and maybe even a link to the three shows, which is posted. I play a major role of one of these historical characters named John Randolph of Roanoke. And it's really basically the story of the early abolitionist movement in the United States, which Francis Scott Key was a part. And it tells, you know, the story of good-hearted men and of good faith who wanted to end the plague of slavery. And, of course, they failed, and that led to the Civil War and to the election of Donald Trump.
In that order. Well, the book is called Where's My Fortune Cookie? My Psychic Surrealistic Silly Story by Firesign Theater's Phil Proctor. He's been my guest, and Phil Proctor's really been wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for being with us on From
indeed,
the Bookshelf.
Indeed, and I hope we talk again. So a two-DVD set that we have available now called Everything You Know Is Wrong, The Declassified Firesign Theater, and it's a whole bunch of our movies and our home movies and other rare video appearances of the Firesign Theater, okay? And it's available at our website, firesigntheater.com, along with a book that has 80 hours of our radio shows called Duke of Madness Motors and various other goodies for anybody who is either a fan of Firesign or would like to know more about it. And one last thing, you can also catch us live streaming 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on Firesign Radio. And the link to it is an old radio you click on at our site, firesidetheater.com. So, you know, we live on. Wonder of the modern age.
Well, that's it for this week's From the Bookshelf. I sure hope you enjoyed the program and will come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to our podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, the Firesign Theater's Phil Proctor. His new book is called Where's My Fortune Cookie? My Psychic Surrealistic Story. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. We'll see you next week.